I'm going to ask you to humor me for just a minute. I don't have a video to share with you this morning, but we are going to play a little game. Okay? My son got this game for, I guess it was Christmas a few years back. It was called Logo Party. And the idea was that it has these logos that gradually pop up, and you're supposed to see if you can be the first one to guess the logo. Now, this is not a competition, so it's not trying to trounce the person in front of you, but I'm going to put some logos on the screen, and as soon as you recognize it, you just call out what the name of the company is. Here we go.
Nike.
There you go. Here we go.
Tommy.
That was an ode to Brandon, by the way. Microsoft. There we go.
Facebook.
Yeah, everybody knows what that one is these days, don't you?
McDonald's. Target. Shell. British.
Stop. You know, there are some people sitting in Manhattan that are overly excited right now because you knew exactly what those logos stood for. Not only could I ask you the name of the company, I could probably ask you what they did or what they sold or what their mission was. I might even be able to ask you their slogan and you'd be able to couple it just by seeing that logo. But all those logos have something in common. There isn't a word on them. There was a letter in a couple of them, an M for the Golden Arches and McDonald's, a little F in them, but there isn't a word on them. The other thing they have in common is they're all pretty simple. There's nothing complex about any of those pictures, just a simple shape or the simple design, the simple color scheme, nothing complicated about it whatsoever, but yet somehow these wordless, uncomplicated images help us identify the company and what they do and what service they provide, and probably, even like I said, the slogans that we couple with it. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such things there is no law. We've been looking at this fruit of the Spirit, not from the aspect of there are a bunch of different fruits, but that there's one fruit with many different pieces and parts. And remember I told you we were going to divide this up into two different sections. We were going to do the inside aspects. That would be the love, joy, peace, and patience. Those were the first aspects that we covered. And those are the things that work more on the inside to begin to change our life. And then we're going to take a couple weeks, because we're going to actually cover four aspects today. We're going to take a couple weeks to talk about the outside things. The things that we see, or more importantly, maybe it's the peel. The things that are on the outside of the fruit. And the first thing I want you to note is not all peels look the same. They don't. They have different colors. Some of them are thick. Some of them are thin. They have different textures. Some of them are kind of bumpy. Some of them are kind of slick. They have different things to get done with them. Some of them are taken off of the fruit and thrown in the trash can, like a banana. I'm assuming nobody here eats the banana peel. If so, come see me afterwards. We need to talk. But then there are others that the peel is quite appropriate to eat, like that of an apple or a pear. So not all peels are exactly the same. But you know what? They all serve the same purpose. You know what the purpose of a peel on the fruit is? It has several. It's designed to protect the meat of the fruit. It provides identification. It's what carries the color and the pigmentation of that fruit. It provides beauty. We sing America the Beautiful, and as you sing that song, you have all those visual images of the amber graves and Wayne, the amber, I can't say that, the amber, somebody help me out here. There you go, the amber waves of grain, there you go. We have that picture and the fruited trees and all that, but you know what, that beauty, it attracts consumers. Of course, then the consumers consume, and then the consumers distribute the seeds, all because of the peel. And the thing is our spiritual fruit, our spiritual peel, well, it does the exact same thing. It's made of four aspects that we're going to look at today. It's called gentleness, faithfulness, goodness, and kindness. These are the four things we want to observe today. And all four of these words are connected to an action. That's why I like these. These aren't words that you can easily identify just that's kind or that's gentle. It has a cumulative action to it. But the thing is when you look at these words, they all end in that postfix. You might youngest son would be happy because we've been talking prefix and postfixes at our dinner table. That feels like for months. So it's the postfix of nest. Nest means, quite simply, a state of being, a quality of being, or the measure of being. When you add the word nest to it, it adds the idea of being. It takes these simple words, these simple adverbs, and it turns them into perpetual nouns. Goodness, kindness, faithfulness, gentleness. So this morning, we're going to take a look at these three different nests in action. If you have your copy of God's Word, make your way to Luke chapter 10. We're going to look at a chunk, and I'm going to read it as you're making your way there, and then we'll come back and break it down. Then Jesus answered and said, a certain man went down to Jerusalem, to Jericho, who fell among thieves, who stripped him of his clothing, wounded him, and departed, leaving him half dead. Now by chance, a certain priest came down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. Likewise, a Levite, when he arrived at the place, came and looked and passed by on the other side. But a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion. So he went to him and bandaged his wounds, and pouring on oil and wine, he set him up on his own animal and brought him to an inn. And he took care of him. On the next day, when he departed, he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper, and said to him, take care of him, and whatever more you spend, when I come again, I will repay you. And this is a familiar story. It's the story that Jesus told. It's called the Good Samaritan. But if you begin to pull this story apart, you can see these four different nests working in conjunction with one another. But first, I want to give you a little backstory. Let's talk about this man. We assume he's Jewish. I mean, he's coming from Jerusalem, heading down to Jericho. And as we look at him, his entire life is under siege. He's going along the road, and he's minding his own business, and he's doing what he's supposed to be doing. And all of a sudden, these robbers, these bandits, they come out, and his life is now under siege. Things happen to him. He's robbed. He's stripped. He's wounded. And he's left right there on the side of the road for dead. He's done. And I want you to see some parallel, because this is often how our lives are, how the world's life are. As we have dealt with sin in our life, we are people that have been traveling our lives, and all of a sudden things happen, our existence becomes under siege, and then you know what? We're robbed, wounded, and left for dead. And yeah, I know, you're wondering when I'm going to get to that first blank. Just hold tight. I'm getting you ready. I can see, like, when do I start writing? I'll let you know when. Because if I had put all this on there, I'd have needed like 2 bulletins. Because there were a lot of setup that you have to do for this to understand what we're talking about. But I want you to realize he was passed by. Now, religion was given a chance to help this man, wasn't he? It was a priest that happened down the road. And he passed him by. It just wasn't what he was interested in. Good people were given a chance to help this man. It was a Levite who maybe wasn't a priest, but he was at least, you know, the best of the best among the Jerusalem, the Israelites. When you saw a Levite, they were from the priestly tribe, even if they weren't a priest themselves. So good people were given a chance, and you know what? Passed by. These people, they were present. They were on the same road this man was on. They saw the situation of this man. They looked at him and they realized he's in trouble. As they weren't oblivious to what was going on. Maybe they even stopped. It's kind of in human nature, right? When you see a wreck or an accident or something happen on the side of a road, we have to slow down and look and rubberneck a little bit and wonder what's going on. They may have even paused and examined the situation. But in the end, they passed him by. They left him right where he was, unwilling to get involved. And this is where your notes pick up, because this is what I want you to take from this portion of the story. Being religious and being good does not produce fruit consistently. Just because you're a religious person, just because you're a good person, doesn't mean that this fruit that we're looking at actually lives in your life, it takes something a little bit more than just being religious and good. So what I want to do this morning is I want to take a look at this fruit in action. I don't want to sit here and try to explain to you what kindness is. I don't want to explain to you what goodness is. I don't want to explain to you what gentleness is. I don't want to explain to you what faithfulness is. I just want to look at the story, and you know what? It's kind of evident. It's kind of obvious. It leaps off the page, and we can start filling in the blanks about what it means to be these things. And then you know what? The hope is that you'll be able to take those things and translate it to your life about when you're walking down life's road, how it is you're supposed to respond to what you see. So the first thing we have to look at is this idea of goodness. Goodness, that which is morally right, or the word that we sometimes see in Scripture is righteousness. And as we look at the third guy that comes down that road, that Samaritan, we see his goodness, because you know what? He looks at this man and he does something that the other two guys were unable to do. He has compassion on him. He sees the situation there, and he isn't just there to be good. He has goodness within him, because immediately when he sees this man and sees the trouble his life is in, it says he has compassion upon it. Compassion is the ability to feel sympathy or pity, concern for suffering or misfortunes of others. You know, the funny thing is that, well, God has compassion. This is what it says in Psalm 86:15. But you, O Lord, are God, full of compassion and gracious, long-suffering and abundance and mercy and truth. That's God. He had compassion on our life so much so that he sent his son. And you know what? His son had compassion. Jesus had compassion. Jesus had compassion when he found people that were lost, according to Matthew 9:36. Jesus had compassion when he found people on the side of life's road and they were hurting, according to Matthew 14:14. Jesus had compassion when he came along people on the road, and those people, well, they were hungry, according to Matthew 15:32. Isn't that funny? Jesus had compassion for spiritual, physical, and emotional needs. And the funny thing is Jesus had this really crazy idea that since he had so much compassion, well, we should have compassion also. Matthew 18:33 says, "Should you not also have had compassion on your fellow servant, just as I have pity on you?" Jesus had this crazy idea that because he demonstrated compassion in his ministry, that those who followed him would also have compassion in their ministry. This goodness would just flow right out of them. So much so that you need to examine your life really closely. Compassion is something sometimes we're cynics about. We don't have much of it. So let me encourage you, if you have the inability to feel compassion, maybe it's time you go upstream and ask yourself, do you really experience God's love? Have you really experienced God's joy? Do you understand God's peace? Are you willing to follow God's patience? Because if you do those things as you're walking down life and you see those people stranded on the side of life's road, you will have compassion. You can't have anything but. Your heart will go out for those people that are struggling. And then this next phase kicks in and you begin to see kindness. Kindness is the quality of being friendly, generous, and considerate. Those are great words that we need to sometimes incorporate in the way that we do our Christian life. Friendly, generous, and considerate. So what about this Samaritan? Where do we see his kindness? Well, in verse 34 it says, "So he went to him and bandaged his wounds, and pouring on oil and wine, he sent him on his own animal and brought him to an inn and took care of him." See, this good Samaritan, well, he came in physical contact with this man on the side of the road. He didn't just look at him and say, let me pray for you, brother. I see you're in trouble. He physically got involved with what he was seeing. He focused on repairing what was broken, pulled out some bandages, and started to maybe set the wounds. Funny thing is, he disinfected. He poured in some wine. Don't know why he was carrying the wine. Maybe it was for his own consumption. Maybe he was headed for some kind of a party or something. But he took the wine off of his own animal, and he decided to use this precious wine to disinfect the wounds of this person. Not only did he use the wine, he poured in some oil. This would have soothed the wounds as it began to coat inside of it. It would have brought some refreshing comfort to this man. But then he went a step further. You want to see kindness? No, yeah, he removed him from danger. He didn't just fix his problems and then tip his hat and say, okay, I fixed everything I could do here, but I got somewhere I got to be. I got something I got to go do. So you'll just have to figure it out. No, what did he do? He went out of his way. He put him on his own animal. And he took him to an inn. And he gave him a place to heal. And in case you miss it, that's the definition of a church. As we see people on the side of the road, on the side of Rice Road, and sin has overtaken them, and they've beaten them down, and they've robbed them of their dignity, and they've stripped them of their life, and they've left them on the side of the road for dead, we, the church, when we come along that life, we should have the same attitude. Oh my goodness, look, we have compassion, and we're going to do something about where you have been left in your life, even if it means it's going to cost me something, and even if it means I'm going to have to change my direction, we have to have compassion, kindness. That's what this fruit's supposed to do to our life. So then we get to the idea of gentleness. Now, gentleness, really simple, is, mild in temperament or behavior. And if you start looking for the gentleness in the Good Samaritan story, it's not going to be found in what you read. It's going to be found in what you don't read in the story. See, I've been in church a long time, and I know what happens. When you find the person on the side of life's road, and they kind of messed up their life, I know what the church is supposed to do. I mean, I grew up in church, but what we think the church is supposed to do, I want you to look at what the Samaritan didn't do. I think it's important. There was no lecture about traveling that road. He didn't look at that man and say, what were you thinking? This is a dangerous place for you to be. Why are you even on this road? There was no lecture. There was no trying to correct the mistakes of the past. There was no mention of the Samaritan concerning himself or the man's heritage. He didn't look at the man and say, but you're a Jew and I'm a Samaritan. I'm not supposed to help you. He didn't look at the man and have any judgment for this individual. He didn't have that at all. There was not even a mention. He didn't even come up with the idea of whether the guy on the side of the road was Jewish or not. All he knew, he was a man in need. That's what the Samaritan saw in gentleness. No expectation of how he was going to get repaid. It wasn't fair. He just saw a man in need and decided to meet the need. If he had focused on the man himself, my guess is the Samaritan passes this guy by just like religion and good people. But when he focuses on the need, that fruit of the Spirit is growing inside of me, that love, joy, and peace that I've experienced, that patience to have time with people there, it begins to blossom outward. And the judgment and the lectures and the condescending things that sometimes we feel the necessary need to do, it just went away. Because all this man could see was a guy that if I leave him here, in this state, in this place, if I leave this guy here, he dies. And that's not acceptable. Have you ever been down a road and you saw somebody in need? I'm talking about the physical road. You know, you're riding down the road And you look over and there's the person and the steam's coming off their engine. Do you stop or keep going? Now, I know what's going to happen. You know, we have, oh my gosh. You know how many people probably are out there to try to take advantage of me? And do you stop or do you keep going? And we used to have this friend. His name was Aaron Zawadzki. I didn't understand him at all. Because he had this knack for just picking up strangers on the side of the road and taking them wherever they needed to go. Scared his wife half to death. Because sometimes on the way going, taking them where they needed to be, he'd just bring them home first. Who is? I don't know. I found him on the side of the road. His car was broken down. I need to come home and get a change of clothes first. He just took him wherever. I'm like, I don't know that I would be able to do that, but I should be able to. What about on life's spiritual road? Have you ever walked down life's spiritual road and you just saw somebody that, man, their life is a train wreck. Their life is a disaster. They have made so many bad decisions and they've done so many things wrong. Have you ever thought about maybe you're supposed to stop and try to fix the issue? Not fixing it by telling them what they did wrong. Fixing it by just getting involved in their situation. Being physical about it. Bandaging those wounds. Ministering to those open wounds. Applying a little disinfectant. Not because you're trying to prove that they did something wrong, but because you're interested in healing them. That's what this fruit looks like. That's what we see when you see the peel of the church. Of course, there's another aspect that he had going into this. See, the wrong focus leaves the man in judgment, not gentle. I almost forgot my own little slide there. I guess I caught up in what we were doing here. Got to make sure you get your little blank filled in there. If we don't get the right focus, we're not going to be gentle. We're going to be judgmental. And we're certainly not going to be faithful. Faithfulness, it means loyal, constant, and steadfast. And I got to tell you, of the four nesses that are on here, this is boring. I mean, faithful just means you are what you are and you continue to do what you do. You're like the little engine that could. Chugga, 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 chugga. Up the hill, nice and consistent. You never go too fast. You never go too slow. You're like the turtle in the race of the tortoise and the hare. You kind of are what you are, and you go through life, and you're just there. You can count on you. You're the same today, tomorrow, and yesterday. You just don't change much. But there's some things to be said about faithfulness. Faithful people are usually the people we count on, right? If you know you can depend on somebody, then when your chips are down and life is in trouble, that's the person you call. Faithful churches are churches that minister to people when they're in need. Because you know what? It's easy to minister to people when life isn't in need. It's when life is falling all apart that the church really shows its stripes. So what about this Samaritan? Where do we see him? Well, take a look at verse 35 there. On the next day, we're leaving. When he departed, he took out 2 denarii and gave him to the innkeeper and said to him, take care of him, and whatever more you spend when I come again, I will repay you. Now again, the first thing I want you to notice, and this isn't in your notes, but faithfulness has an expense to it. Just like goodness, just like kindness, just like gentleness, this otherness, there's a cost to it. Because you see, faithfulness is the idea of, well, he saw his commitment going further than just his presence. He had to put something else out there because he did have somewhere else he had to be. Life was calling him somewhere else. And it wasn't enough that he just got into a safe place. He made preparation to make sure the job got finished. He left behind some money to the innkeeper and said, you know what? Let him stay. He's had a rough life. He's in a rough situation. Just let him stay put and give him time to heal. And by the way, whatever else gets run up, put it on my account and I'll take care of it when I come back. See, he invested in the man's future. He wasn't just interested in feeding the man for a day. He was interested in feeding the man forever. Because obviously what would probably happen is this man would observe the goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and kindness of the Samaritan, and maybe the next time this man was passing down life's road and he saw somebody else in need, guess what? He's probably going to stop. That's the way it works. Not only did he invest in his future, he had a plan for taking care of the man's needs, all of them. Not just the immediate needs that were there on the side of the road. He had a plan for taking care of everything. And here's the deal. He didn't get to have a committee meeting. He didn't get to sit down and decide whether or not it was in budget or out of budget. He didn't get to have a conversation about whether or not he had time to do it or not. He was making this plan up on the fly. He saw the man. He said, there's a need. I'm going to try to fix it. After I fix it, I'm going to take him to a hotel. I'm going to put him up. And then, I got to get home to the wife and kids. But I'm just going to start an account. You realize what he was doing, don't you? He gave the man a blank check. What if this Jewish man that he rescued on the side of the road was some kind of charlatan? And he realized he now had an open tab at the Hilton. He could hang around there for a few more months, and he could have sat by the pool sipping champagne and ordering caviar. And when this poor guy came back through, he would have had more of a tab than he thought. He didn't even give that any concern. He just said, hey, look, here's what I think it's going to take, but if it takes more than this, just put it on my tab. Let me just give you the blank check. Would you feel comfortable doing something like that? Somebody's life is in need, and you just say, we'll do whatever it takes. Here's the blank check, and we'll settle the account when we get the problem fixed. Oh, I don't think the church works right that way anymore, does it? It's more complicated than that, right? Is it? Those little logos that we looked at to start this thing, they weren't very complicated, but they got the message across. You think that kind of an open invitation to let us heal your life, if we saw that kind of appeal on a church, what do you think our church would look like? What do you think would happen? We probably have so many desperate and need people coming through the doors, we wouldn't know what to do with them all. Or would we? We could then share Christ with them as we are fixing the other issues. See, here's what I want to know. Which are you this morning? Are you a passerby or are you committed? The name of this series is called Living Commitment. The sign out front says Living Commitment bears fruit. So the question is are you a passerby? You're walking down life's road and you see these people whose lives have been derailed. And it doesn't have to always be somebody on the side of the road with a flat tire. Look, we have all kinds of people. You know, there are people that their lives have been derailed by the decisions they've made in their past. Are you a passerby in the fact that you walk down this road and you see these people on the side of the road and you're like, tell me what they did in their life. I bet they deserve some of what they got. Yeah, that'll teach you to do what you did. See? When you're doing on this road all by yourself, do you have judgment in your voice? Do you have a condescending nature that when you see those people, you become religious? You become very steeped in, well, I would never do something like that. You wouldn't catch me in that kind of sin. When you do that, it's very easy to pass them by because you now see yourself as better than them. Are you just a good person? That you see those people on the side of the road and you see them there and you're like, oh, my heart aches for them. But I got an appointment to make today. And so while you can feel a little bit of compassion, not really compassion, just an emotion, maybe you can feel that, but it's easy for you to pass them by because you're such a good person. You'll make up for that. You'll make up for not being able to stop now. You'll do something nice later on down the road. So you pass it by. Or are you committed to Christ? Now, this makes it a little tougher. Because Jesus has this idea when he tells this story that if you are committed to Christ, you will not be the religious person, and you will not be the good person, you'll be the Samaritan, the neighbor, the person that puts their life on hold to work through that person's problems. That's Jesus' hypothesis. That's what he thinks is going to happen. That's the theory. And if you're unable to do that, then you have to start questioning, are you really committed to the cause? That makes this very hard, doesn't it? That makes this very personal.
Because you know what? We're going to go out of these doors today, and we're going to be headed to wherever we're going and all the things that we've got planned. And I'm guaranteeing you, you're going to see somebody in need somewhere. Did you pass them by? Are you committed enough to what we're doing here to stop and administer a little fruit of the Spirit? Goodness, gentleness, kindness, and faithfulness. What is it you're doing with it? We're going to do a time of decision, and this is supposed to hit close to home. I want you to go home today and think about, am I really committed? Because talking about love, joy, and peace, well, there's some discussion about it. There's some up for debate whether I have love, joy, peace, and patience. There is no open for discussion here. Because if you look at your life and you can't see the willingness to meet other people's needs, then you need to start questioning your fruit. I'm not questioning your fruit. You need to question your own fruit. Maybe this time of decision is you need to sit down and you need to start thinking about your life. How committed to God am I? How committed to Christ am I? Maybe that's the decision time for. Maybe you need to take action during this decision time. Come up for work. We'll find somebody to pray with you. That's fine if you have some things you need to change in your life. Maybe today you're the man on the side of the road. And you know what? Your life has been derailed by sin. And you find yourself in a pickle. You know what? You feel like you've just been left on the side of life's road for dead. Come on forward. Let me tell you about a man that walked the road to take care of that for you, who definitely had goodness, kindness, gentleness, and faithfulness all the way to the cross. Would you?